Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. We're joined by Safwan Ghai, CCO of Sovereign Metals, and Charles Archer, investor and analyst. Welcome both.
Hiya.
Hi Phil. Hi Charles.
Yeah, so Charles, you recently updated your written article around Sovereign Metals. So please give us your thoughts and use the chance and opportunity to ask any questions of Safwan. Over to you, Charles.
Well, let's start at the start. I mean, the first article that I put out on Sovereign Metals, it was trading around 22, 22.5p back in December. We're now up to 36p a share, so it's gone up about 50%, which, Safwan, you must be pretty happy about.
Look, I think the market's slowly understanding exactly what we have our hands on here at Kaseya. It is a tier one deposit. It's, you know, once in a generation find. I think previously when we've talked titanium, rutile, graphite, and then, you know, say that those commodities are in one ore body and that ore body is in Malawi, it's ended up glazing a lot of eyes in the audience. Mm. But I think over time, people are understanding, yes, these are critical minerals. These are products that, you know, the world is looking out for. They are imperative to decarbonization, to defense, to aerospace, to our daily lives. And so you're seeing a lot more people understanding just what we have at Kaseya, which is good to see.
I mean, it seems that Rio Tinto, your major investor, has decided that you're on the right lines. We saw today that they've invested an additional 18.5 million Australian dollars a few days before that option ran out. I guess that kind of signifies to the market potentially just how big this deposit is, just how important it is globally.
For us as a management team, look, what it signifies is everything that Rio Tinto has seen on site within the midst of our own team, working alongside us on the technical side, as well as the social side, the environmental side. It's clearly ticked all the boxes so far. It kind of validates what we've been doing over the last 12 deposits since Rio came in.
Yeah, well, it is very interesting, isn't it? I mean, obviously, this is something that long-term investors wanted to see. But, but beyond that, beyond Rio Tinto and its investment, I mean, obviously, the big thing that's going on at the moment is the pilot plant. I've had a look at, on the photos on Twitter, this thing looks pretty massive to me, just working with junior explorers. And yet it's only roughly, maybe 5% or, at most 10% of what the actual mine is going to look like once it's built. How's the pilot plant coming along at the moment?
Yeah, it's all on schedule, all on track, on budget. We have dug out the demo pits, the rehab pits. We've dug out the water storage pond that's now being filled. Get on our social media and see all those pictures and videos that we try and post at least once a week to keep everyone abreast of that. And you're right, it looks pretty impressive. It looks pretty big, but it's a reminder of the size and seer when you think, let's do the maths. We're moving 150,000 cubic meters over 3 months. So that's about 600,000 meters, cubic meters for the year. Each cubic meter is about 2.5 tons. So in total, we're moving about 1.5 million tons on an annualized basis. We envisage steady state mining 24 million tons. So look at the pilot mining pictures. Do look at those images. Multiply it by 15, 16, 17 in your head, and you'll get an idea of the size and scale of Kaseya when
it's massive, isn't it? I mean, this is the thing. I think if you're people investing in junior explorers would look at your pilot plant and go, wow, that's the real thing. And I think it's really important to highlight, this is not the real thing. This is just test work, And it's amazing to me that something of that size is just effectively due diligence on the deposit that you're doing. Because it's not like you're not planning on using that pilot plant to generate, masses of revenue. The idea is to better understand what you have and then build the bigger thing in the future, right?
Correct. Look, you don't approach, if you've done your homework and you've been there, done that plenty of times as much as our management team have, you don't turn up to a tier one deposit on day one and say, right, let's start building this thing out. You do have the cash in the bank and you have the wherewithal to find the financing. You just don't do that, right? You want to understand, what does it actually mean to mine this? What's the best permutation of mining it? What's the best combination of hydro and dry mining? What does it mean to backfill the material? We're essentially, very simply, we're taking out this soil from the top 20-odd meters. We're taking out 1% of it in the form of rutile, and we're separating 1.5% of it in the form of graphite flakes, which is our product. And the rest of it goes back to where it was. But obviously, processed it a bit. So is it going to backfill completely? No. We'll need some kind of tailing storage solution. And you get that solution by pilot mining. You don't get it by, you know, starting off mining and then figuring this thing
out later on. Well, I mean, the thing is that obviously there's with this deposit, there's no crushing, there's no blasting. It does seem to me kind of counterintuitive, maybe not the right word, but the point of the pilot plant is to see if there's any problems, right? So you almost want to see no problems at the same time, see a few so that you can preempt them for the future.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look, this is the reason why we've got, if you go online and you see the demo pits, we've got 7 different demo pits. And what we're doing is putting a different combination of different types of backfilled material into those pits, as well as different ways that we're processing the actual minerals, and we're seeing what's best, you know? And obviously, what we learn in that part of Kaseya is specific to that part of Kaseya. It won't be a complete carbon copy wherever we go on the kind of 200 square kilometers of mineralization, but it lets us understand, depending on the type of mineral that we're, the type of material that we're mining, what to expect, and if there are any kind of potential issues that we can overcome them before we even stick the spade in the ground.
Which is exactly what, you know, you want to hear as a long-term investor. I mean, on the 3rd of June, Sam Dorland from the ASX, or the Australian Securities Exchange, he sent, you know, effectively just sent a little email saying, why is the share price shooting up so high? And you sent something back, not you personally, but the company sent something back. You know, like, my interpretation was, people were finally realizing what we have here. You know, there's no specific reason why it's rocketing higher, and yet it keeps going up and up. I mean, do you think we're kind of just at the start now of the share price, or do you think it's going to plateau for a little bit?
No, I think so. I think there's, you know, the reality is, and I think I've made this point before to
me personally, possibly
listeners and other investors, whoever wants to listen to my voice, it's the reality is we haven't, for the best part of 2022, 2023, we hadn't really marketed Sovereign in a way that we're, you know, kind of engaging the market and investors now. Previously, we were busy doing a PFS. We were busy trying to understand the resource. And importantly, for last year, we were busy trying to get Rio Tinto to invest a little bit and become our strategic investor. So all of that takes time and effort, and we had a small team around what is essentially one of the biggest finds ever in the mining industry. But you know, we're over that. We've built the team out. Rio is obviously all, you know, kind of plugged in and playing, and we are engaging the market a bit more. We do see, you know, for example, a couple of UK funds have been buying on market. We know that, and you know, they're building up positions. So I think that's definitely moving the needle on the share price, and just getting the story out there and getting people to understand that this is quite an opportunity, an investment opportunity, is all part and parcel of that.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously Kaseya, you know, I feel like a broker. I feel like Keir Starmer almost, you know, my father was a toolmaker, et cetera, et cetera. But it bears right, Kaseya is already, you know, the largest rutile deposit, the second largest natural flake graphite deposit in the world. But, you know, this is my question. I mean, you announced you were doing follow-up drilling to the north of your current asset, right, within your license boundary. Have we got any updates on that, or is it still ongoing, or assays currently being looked at?
Yeah, look, we're doing, because we're doing everything from the drilling in the north, the pilot mining, some recon drilling back in the south, some infill drilling for the DFS in the future, building out our reserves. It takes a while, right?
I guess I'm asking, is it going to be like a series of RNSs of, you know, is it going to be all in one, or is it going to be like a series of RNSs throughout the next few months?
You'll see a series of RNSs. You know, these are all, as much as, you know, it may be the same team with the same machines, etc., doing the work, you can expect that we will have an RNS on the north. We will have an RNS on infill drilling. We will have an RNS on some of the assay results that we're seeing elsewhere around the deposit. So that's for anyone who's very interested in the drill bits. I think for me personally, the couple of key things I'd be looking out for as a sovereign investor would be, number one, you know, outcomes from the pilot mine.
Yeah.
What we're seeing, having, you know, mined this, we'll start hydro mining it very soon. Actually seeing that in operation will be a big thing. I think it's not very well known outside of sub-Saharan Africa. So people seeing that this stuff actually works, and it's not just complete hokum.
Well, yeah.
And then on top of that, you know, we've put out a few announcements around our graphite and the test work that we're doing there. That continues in the background. So we should, you know, we will hopefully update the market on graphite, how it looks and acts in a battery and all that kind of good stuff.
Well, I mean, we had the update on the 15th of May, you know, entitled Downstream Test Work Shows High Quality Graphite. And essentially what we want to know is it going to work in lithium ion batteries, right? Because that's where the money is. It's where the sector demand is. It looks like it's going to at the moment, but obviously more information coming out from that side. I guess, you know, what you were saying, that first point about seeing what comes out of the pilot plant, there's, I don't know what the right word is, but there's maybe wariness about unique deposit types, right? Cassia is a unique deposit type. It's this graphite, rutile, jewel deposit. And there's nothing like it in the world. And so, which, you know, is both good and bad, because on the one plus side, obviously, you might find you have really superior economics and very low energy usage for the amount of material you're going to get out. On the other, people tend to worry, if it was just a classic ilmenite deposit, for example, it'd probably be a lot less valuable. And yet people would go, yeah, this is definitely viable. So would you say that, you know, once a pilot plant proves that what you think it is, you know, this asset is, does work, you'll probably see a huge rise, both in industry confidence, but also in the share price as well. Would you say?
Yeah, I think so. Look, it's you're not wrong. And, you know, it kind of harks back to the beginning of our conversation that, you know, talking about rutile and graphite and Malawi and uniqueness of a deposit and nothing else like it and the biggest and all those kind of good things, lowest cost. To your average AIM investor, for example, who's potentially been burnt in the mining industry one or two times before, they almost ring alarm bells rather than look like green lights. But we are doing everything we can to de-risk this project in every way, shape or form. And the pilot phase, the pilot mining, the trial rehab, all of that is all part and parcel of it. And of course, as I alluded to, the test work and having MOUs and with future off-takers, all of that will be part and parcel of actually just having a completely de-risked project before we even put, you know, the first spade in
on the ground. Yeah. Well, I mean, you say first spade in the ground. I think a lot of investors would be happy just the pilot plant up and running, making money. You don't even sort of like, you know, that's a further stage than many, many companies get, you know, and possibly, I mean, arguably, you've got a lower market cap than companies with, you know, nowhere close to what you're doing. It all seems to be kind of just working out in your favor at the moment. I mean, late last month, you know, you were talking about Malawi rail upgrades underway. Obviously, we're talking about the Nacala Logistics Corridor, but the railway goes straight through your license area?
It actually does. It goes over the absolute southern tip of the resource.
Right.
So we don't mind that bit in our studies or anything.
Well, I wouldn't mind it under the railway personally, but you know.
It's not a good idea. But yes, it does. Look, and we've looked at previously in our scoping study, we looked at trucking product to the nearest rail junction and putting it on the Nacala railway. On the PFS, we decided that, you know what, it's a cheaper and more kind of responsible environmentally to build a 6 kilometer rail spur. So that's what we'll be envisaging for the project. So you'll have a spur from our gate onto the rail, 6 kilometers. That's not, you know, a big dink in our CapEx whatsoever.
I mean, I don't know, just spitballing here, would it be worth doing that while they're upgrading it next door to you? Or is that something that you think? I don't know. They're already on the side. Just hang on, can you just do a little side railway for us while you're already here?
Oh, look, part and parcel of some of the drilling and some of the pilot mining is exactly where is. We kind of understand where we want the plant, but the configuration of the plant and all of that still needs to be worked out. And depending on that, you know, it will depend on where the access to the plant site and the processing site will be, and, you know, the stockpiles, where do they go, etc. So that's all kind of work in progress. It'll be a bit we decide to build the rail spur before building the plant.
You'd probably be in trouble, wouldn't you? You know, unless you were guessing really well. I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of rambling all over the place. There's been so many developments in the past 6 months. Which, you know, again, why the share price has responded so positively. I mean, I'm going back to the graphite. I mean, in late April, you appointed Dr. Surinder. Is it Gag? Or Gag? Gag. Yeah, I believe it's Gag. Dr. Surinder Gag as Chief Technology Officer for Graphite. What's he currently doing at the moment?
So he's helping us. So let's just take a step back in terms of graphite and get people to understand it, because it is a bit of a kind of a black box. There's lots of kind of urban myths around it, and, you know, larger flake is the better and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
So when you mine graphite, flake graphite, you end up with a product, a graphite basket of different sizes of flakes in there. So think cornflakes and yeah, get all the different sizes. But the smaller stuff gets a lower price than the bigger stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of big stuff gets sold in the market. So if you're talking about having jumbo, super jumbo flakes, and that's going to be your end market, reality is that market is very small. There's a few Chinese users of that super jumbo within factory kind of steel making, etc. You're not going to make a 25, 30, 40, 50 year business out of selling super jumbos.
Yeah.
Over the last few years, where has most flake graphite gone? Into the lithium ion battery space. Now, lithium ion battery anodes are made from kind of the small to mid size flakes. So yes, they currently sell for less than the jumbo, but there's a much more massive market for those. And the reality is, Charles, with the economics at Cassia, we're not too fussed that they sell for a lower price because essentially, having done the homework and looked at everyone else in the graphite space, we'd be the lowest cost producer of flake graphite in the world.
Like a country mile, yeah.
So if we just produce graphite just for the lithium ion battery space, you know, and we would be the largest producer of flake graphite in the world as well. That just gives us complete kind of market leadership in that sector.
Yeah, I mean, it feels a little bit. I mean, it sounds like a little bit like helium, which I, you know, nothing to do with sovereign, but the higher grades of helium is what I've been learning. They fetch a lot more money, but there's a much smaller market. They're using things like semiconductor manufacturing or laser cutting or MRI machines, whereas like the lower grades of helium, even though they fetch less money, it's used in way more applications, and therefore it's just a lot easier to sell. Is that correct? Sort of what you're saying?
Yeah. So look, what we're doing is making sure that our graphite is absolutely on point for the end users in the battery space, right? Whether that be battery makers, whether that be OEMs, who, you know, EV manufacturers, the whole gamut. And from the flake in the ground that's concentrated by the miner and sold off, to turn that into something that goes into the battery, it needs to be purified. So you take out all the nasty. That costs money. So the higher the purity, the better. We can get 97.5% purity out of the ground once we've processed it. We've shown that we can purify it to 99.99% purity as well. Mm-hmm. So that means a lot of the things like sulfur, iron, chromium, alumina, things that you don't want in a battery anode are no longer there or are so minuscule that they make no impact. Once you've purified those flakes, you spheronize them. And what that means is you basically put these flakes into a mill where they slowly overlap one another until they become small balls, spheres, right? Hence spheronization. Yeah. Those spheres are then coated in what's known as pitch. And that coating is the step that we're working on now. So we've shown that our graphite can produce a good concentrate, one of the best concentrates. It can be purified. It can be spheronized. Now we're doing the coating, and alongside the coating, once it's coated, it is essentially the anode active material. We'll stick it in lithium ion batteries and see what it does. If we, you know, charge this battery up and use it 1,000 times, what does that mean for the battery compared to what's on the market right now? And we should have those kind of details out to the market pretty soon.
Good, good. I mean, well, it's all sounding very exciting. I mean, with this pilot plant operation, I'm not going to go massively into depth on it because I feel like we'd be here for the next 400 years. It's kind of a multi-question. The first is, obviously, you're working with Rio Tinto. So they're not just a shareholder. It's a joint technical committee. To what extent is Rio Tinto kind of, I don't know, leading the pilot operation, or, you know, how much input do they have on it? And then the second part of the question, I mean, all these consultants you've got together, so like Motor Engil, Fraser Alexander, Epoch, DRA Global, so these guys are helping with the pilot plant. Are they also going to be the engineers who build the main thing in the future? Or are you keeping your options open?
The view is anyone who is assisting us on the pilot mine will obviously have the knowledge and the expertise to build out the whole thing. Yeah, we have used these consultancies and engineering firms throughout the process of developing Cassia. In terms of Rio Tinto, when they came on board last year, we signed two agreements with them. There's a subscription agreement, which was the 15% shares plus the options, which they've now exercised. So that takes them up to the 19.76%. At the same time as signing the subscription agreement, we signed the what was termed an investment agreement. And that has all the clauses of how we work together with Sovereign. And one of those key points is we have a technical committee with them, three members of Sovereign, three members of Rio, but Sovereign has casting vote on that technical committee. So what that means is essentially what we do in terms of a pilot plant, the whole scope around it is all from Sovereign and its team, but with the input of Rio's understanding and years of having done this and the right individuals within Rio giving us the right assistance and advice. So essentially, I mean, I think if you look at most recent RNS, you'll read that, you know, the investment agreement between Sovereign and Rio basically just makes sure that Rio continues to provide assistance and advice on technical and, importantly, marketing aspects of Kassia.
I mean, it's kind of, I don't know what the word, obviously, Sovereign owns Kassia. That's it. Rio is a large investor. And yet Rio's expertise, and specifically in the titanium space, it's just so useful, you know, forgetting the investment aside, marketing, yes. But I feel like you might find that you're trying to think of the words, you're jumping three steps ahead from where you would have been if you didn't have them on board. Did you pursue them specifically as an investor in the company before, you know, June 2023 or whenever it was they came in? Or were you looking at like a multitude of companies?
No, look, as soon as we started making noises about what we had found, a real rutile deposit within a saprolite, free dig and freely liberated. You can imagine anyone who has anything to do with titanium started knocking on the door. Asking. Yeah. We signed three MOUs before Rio even came in.
Yeah, you did.
On one with Hascor, who are big in the welding space. Of course, 30% of all rutile ends up in welding. Hascor currently takes or took, I don't know what the current conditions are, but it was one of the big customers of Sierra Rutile. And that's where they'd get their rutile product that they'd then market and sell across the US and globally. We signed an MOU with Chemours, which is the NYSE listed company. They're, you know, big chemicals company, but they also are the world's biggest producer of high quality titanium pigment. Mm. So we tick the box on, you know, we can use our rutile within the pigment sphere. And not just any pigment, but high quality pigment. And then we signed an MOU with Mitsui, you know, the $70 billion Japanese trading house. And, you know, their remit is go out and secure supply of raw materials that Japanese industry requires to produce all the goods.
It's as simple as that, isn't it? Yeah.
Right. So when you have the likes of Toho Titanium, Osaka Titanium in Japan, who are two of the biggest kind of aerospace grade titanium metal producers out there, outside of China, outside of Russia, they're harking on about building out their supply, you know, doubling, tripling capacity, all that kind of good stuff. Obviously, you need the raw materials.
You say obviously, I mean, so many companies don't seem to have got that yet. You know, we're going to have this massive AI boom, for example. But, you know, where's the copper coming on from? That we don't know. We'll figure that out later. Titanium, it's the same thing. No one seems to have figured it out. Rutile, there isn't any left, is there? Yeah.
And it's a good point. I'm in the US next week at a few conferences, meeting a few investors. And one of the key things, having been there quite a few times in the last few months, is, you know, obviously you speak rutile and they start questioning it. As soon as you say this is, you know, the highest grade, purest form of titanium mineral, they get it immediately because, you know, the US has been making a lot of noise around titanium. I think it was the US Bureau of Industry and Security recently put out a paper saying titanium is essential for US defense systems, but also 16 out of 16 of the critical infrastructure sectors.
That's right. You're starting to see it with like grant funding. You know, it's unlikely Sovereign would get any, but grant funding in the US for various projects and just critical minerals, they're building up the stockpiles again. It seems to be back on top of the political agenda, you know, regardless. Yeah,
correct. And then what happened, you know, that's just the titanium side of the story. And then you've got graphite, where the White House put a 25% tariff on all graphite coming from China.
China, yeah, yeah.
And so now all of a sudden you've got, you know, this huge deposit that can last for decades, able to supply both titanium feedstock and graphite to anyone who's listening.
It's just so wonderful, isn't it? It just seems to be, I mean, honestly, yes, you've worked really hard, right? And not just you, obviously the company in general, but maybe to an extent you were lucky to find something so amazing, right? Obviously, you're very good explorers, but you're lucky that the railway is being upgraded right, you know, over your land. You're lucky that the confluence of politics, you know, and the political atmosphere that we have is working in your favor. It seems to be it's just really good timing, you know, just in general for this particular asset.
Yeah, and I think usually with these type of assets, you do find that's the case. You know, whether you're a Voisey's Bay or an Olympic Dam or a Grasberg or anything, Stars just seem to align at the right time for these things. And not to say there won't be hiccups, there won't be, you know, bumps in the road. Well, but
if you don't report any, that's when I'll start being worried, you know?
No, and look, all of this is all about optimizing Cassia ready for production, right? So when you've got an asset this kind of size and throwing off the potential kind of economics that the PFS alluded to, the fact that you can be market leader in not one but two critical mineral supply chains,
madness.
It's important that you get it all right.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to finish this kind of grilling that I've given you. I hope you've enjoyed it, but maybe a little bit of grilling.
Yeah, you guys, I mean, do you really think there's any prospect of this company from this?
No, I mean, you know,
I think it hasn't got a chance, to be honest with you. No chance at all.
No, the thing is, Kev, is that honestly, like, sometimes, like, I'll grill a CEO and, like, there are, like, chinks in the armor or there's issues with the company, right? And often that's reflected in the share price, so that's fine. But with this particular one, I just can't see the downside. It's just... No matter which way it goes, it's just going to be wonderful. So, Pan, I guess I'm going to finish with ESG, essentially, right? Because I think this is also really important. Now, obviously, we can talk about how kind of low energy, how low the energy is going to be getting these, you know, minerals out of the ground. But Malawi, you know, is a relatively poor country. I don't know that much about the jurisdiction. I know that you've got really good connections with the government there and everyone seems to be very much on board. What kind of environmental social governance steps are you taking to ensure that you're bringing a net positive to the country?
We've made a bit of a song and dance about this, but it's only because we as a team and with our partner Rio Tinto understand you can't build huge corporations in countries, you know, in host countries without any kind of real engagement with local communities, without those local communities. And supporting those local communities is just part and parcel of what we as Sovereign Metals do. So, you know, you would have seen that this year we kicked off a conservation farming program. The social team within Sovereign is the former social team for First Quantum in Zambia, who are also the team that helped Randgold in the DRC. So they've got a lot of experience of dealing with...
I didn't know that.
...one company, social strategies. So we've got this conservation farming program. Just to put a bit of context into that, what does that essentially mean? Look, we've taken 90 local farmers who farm on the ground that we'd be mining. We've shown them and trained them and taught them ways of farming, known as conservation farming, which uses less irrigation, less kind of much more mulching, things like that. And what we've seen, even before the harvest, was that they were getting crop yields on their maize crop, so you know, corn. They were achieving anywhere between 3 and 8 times what wow. what they normally get is enough to feed their family for 9 months. With 3 months of let's just see what happens, right? That's how, let's be honest, that's how the real world works, right? Outside of our lovely kind of right, we are the minority on this planet. The majority deals with life like that. For us to go in and be able to help them produce enough crops at a time of essentially drought within Southern Africa as well, right, that they can A, produce enough to feed their family, you know, all year round, but also start selling that and kind of bringing in some kind of commercialization into like the local farming world. You know, that's quite important for us. And so you probably saw an announcement that we made a few weeks ago that we signed an MOU with a group called Palladium, which backed by USAID. So, you know, the biggest kind of foreign kind of, you know, impact and development entity in the world. They've funded Palladium and we're collaborating with Palladium to develop agriculture value chains within Malawi. So all of that should, you know, help those farmers whose land we are essentially, you know, borrowing over time before we give it in a state that is as good as, if not better than what they found it as. So you know, for us, that's just one of the social initiatives we're doing. We're doing other things like education scholarships, you know, or diversity and inclusion within our own Malawi labs, for example. We have 80 Malawians working in our lab, most of which are women today. So we're a real company doing real things on the ground, and we want to make a real change to the people on the ground as well.
That's fantastic to hear, because that funds into my very last question before we say goodbye. If this was deposit was in Zambia, for example, or Zimbabwe, there would probably be a fair amount of very skilled labor, right? And you know, possibly more infrastructure. Do you foresee there being any issues getting just the manpower, the skilled manpower you need to run the mine that you're planning to build in the future? Or is that something that you think Rio Tinto will be able to help out with?
Both of those are correct. Look, before we even got to Malawi, there was no understanding of metallurgy around rutile. There was no understanding or real understanding of, you know, separation of graphite flakes through a flotation process. And these are things that we've taught, you know, we've helped coach the locals and train them in understanding this type of stuff. So the thing about Malawi is, as much as it is, yes, it is a poor country, it's a poor country ready for development, ready for education, ready for training, ready for understanding, ready to support businesses, you know, to come over, teach the locals how to do this. According to the PFS, we'd have about 1,000 direct employees just in the construction phase. There will be a phase of coaching and training. That's all built into our plans. But we foresee that, you know, this will be a Malawian project run mainly by Malawians in the future.
Wow. Yes. Okay. I mean, I'm not gonna press you further on Rio Tinto or buyouts or anything like that, because I feel like you won't be able to answer. I did say it was my last question, but one just popped into my head. Various media outlets, I'm not going to name them, are starting to compare what you have to the growth potential that Fortescue saw back in the day when it was a much smaller company. Any comment on that? How far do you think this thing could go?
Firstly, I'm going to sound like most of our politicians do and not answer the question directly.
I knew you wouldn't, but I had to ask.
It's nothing new there, Sapan, let's be honest.
I think it's quite telling how the market's finally perceiving us. But I think, you know, as I said before, Cassia is a once-in-a-lifetime find. You don't really come across these. And you're right, we were, you know, there was some serendipity to finding this project. It's not like we went into Malawi thinking, yes, you know, our PhD thesis says that there's going to be a rutile graphite deposit here. We were in Malawi looking for graphite. The graphite that we were processing kept having high grades of titanium in there. And then we started looking for the titanium and ended up tripping over the biggest find in the country. So, you know, there is some serendipity to it. And as you said, you know, it does help that the macro is aligning with those commodities. So you can see why people are making those parallels. As I said, you know, before, you know, our plan is just to get this through to production and we'll go to continue with that head on. If anything else happens in the meantime, we'll deal with that then.
So in summary, I'll translate for you guys if you're listening. They're going to sell this for a large amount of money to Rio Tinto, a massive titanium major. And then Sapan, Kev, Phil and I are all going to go to the beach and have cocktails. About right? Perfect. Wonderful. Well, it's been lovely to chat to you, Sapan.
Southern Comfort, lemonade and lime, please.
Well, that's fair. Ice. I'll be having a, what do I like? A Key West cooler when I'm on holiday. A little bit of Midori at the bottom, Malibu and Arch with the orange juice, and then vodka and cranberry juice at the top, slice of orange. Foam.
And Sapan, what would be your cocktail of choice?
Oh, look, I've stayed away from the carbs for about a month, so I just want a beer, to be honest.
Okay. Well, I think you'll all agree, you are listening, that this has been very informative. We found out quite a bit more about sovereign metals from Sapan. Thanks for all the questions, Charles. And I refer you to Charles's article as well. He's written an article in the last few days that's gone out, so check that out. What's the website they can check that out?
This one is miningaim.co.uk, but I'll put it out on Twitter, Telegram, everywhere. You'll be able to find it very easily.
Okay, so you will have seen the article, and now you can listen to what's being said as well. So we hope it's been useful for you all, informative, and I think you've got a few prospects, Sapan, so let's see how it all counts.
Thanks, gents. It's been a pleasure. It's
been wonderful.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.